Ever get that feeling when you were looking at a deed and you were like, huh, something about this just seems a little bit off?
Oh,
Like
yeah.
maybe the language isn't quite fit the people involved.
Yeah, it definitely happens.
Well, today we are taking a real deep dive into a Pennsylvania property law case called Estate of Regal.
Okay.
So think of this deep dive as your like crash course in how courts figure out what these super important property documents actually mean, especially when like the terms used don't really line up with the situation. You know what I
Yeah,
mean?
for sure.
So it is going to be really helpful for any law student trying to wrap their heads around property law and estate planning.
Absolutely.
So what is so interesting about this Regal case is how it shows us that tension between like the strict legal definitions of property ownership and the reality of people trying to like express what they want through words.
Right.
It makes you think about what happens when those two things don't really match up.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what's so fascinating about Regal.
So let's get into the details and look at what actually happened in this case. Okay, so back in 1972, there were these two people, William and Marion Harbors, and they transferred a property to Raymond Regal and his mom, Gertrude.
Okay.
Sounds pretty straightforward, right?
Yeah, so far.
But here's the catch. The deed specifically said they were getting the property as tenants by the entireties.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Law students out there, a little red flag should be going off in your head right about now.
Yeah, I can see why.
Because Raymond and Gertrude, they were mother and son, not husband and wife.
Right, which is kind of a key requirement for tenancy by the entireties.
Exactly. That's the whole puzzle the court had to figure out.
Right.
So tenancy by the entireties, it's a very specific type of ownership they have in Pennsylvania. But it's only for married couples.
Yeah.
And it comes with, these built-in protections against creditors of just one spouse and, super important, the right of survivorship.
Right.
Meaning, when one spouse dies, the other one automatically gets full ownership of the property.
Exactly.
Okay, so now let's fast forward to 1990. Gertrude passes away. Now, her other children, they enter the scene and they're saying, hey, wait a minute. Gertrude owned half of this property.
Okay.
And that half should go to her estate and then be divided up among all of her heirs.
Makes sense.
Yeah, they basically thought Raymond should only inherit whatever portion of the property his mom legally owned.
Right, so a standard inheritance situation.
Right. But the Orphans Court, they saw things a bit differently.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they ruled that the property went straight to Raymond through survivorship. So
Interesting.
that means they must have recognized some kind of joint ownership with that automatic transfer when someone dies, right?
It seems like it.
So then the case went up to the Superior Court, and they had to figure out, okay, did this deed, even though it used language meant for married couples, did it actually create a legal way for this mother and son to have survivorship rights?
So it's all about figuring out what happens when you use this very specific legal term, tenants by the entireties, for people who legally can't be tenants by the entireties, right?
Right. It's kind of like calling a banana an apple.
Yeah, I get it.
The name doesn't change what it actually is. So the
Exactly.
big question is, what's the legal effect of using the wrong term here?
Right.
Does it just become a normal tenancy in common, where
Yeah.
each person owns a separate share that they can inherit? Or did using that very specific, even though incorrect wording, actually show a clear intention that the court had to recognize?
Right. So that's what they had to figure out.
And this is where things get really interesting.
Okay.
The Superior Court really focused on this core idea in property law that the actual words used in the deed are the main way to understand what the parties wanted.
Okay.
So they reasoned that even though Raymond and Gertrude couldn't legally be tenants by the entireties, the fact that they used that exact term means they probably wanted survivorship rights.
Right, like they're trying to achieve that outcome.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And what's really cool here is how the court tried to understand the underlying intention. They knew that the people involved, the original grantors, and probably Raymond and Gertrude themselves, they chose those specific words for a reason.
Right.
Even if they weren't lawyers who knew all the technical details about the term,
Yeah.
tenants by the entireties, it's just so strongly connected to this idea of automatic inheritance between two people that the court felt like they had to acknowledge what they were going for.
They had to honor that intention.
Right. So basically, the court said, okay, you can't have tenancy by the entireties here, but it's clear you wanted the survivor to own the whole property. So we're going to interpret this as creating a joint tenancy with the right of survivorship.
Okay.
It's like the court was saying, we see what you were trying to do, even if you didn't use the exact right legal words.
Right. They're trying to be fair.
Yeah. And, you know, when we step back and look at the bigger picture of property law, this Regal case really highlights how important it is to use accurate and precise language in all legal documents, especially deeds.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, while the court here could kind of look past the wrong terminology and figure out what they probably meant, relying on a court to do that is always riskier than just getting it right in the first place.
For sure.
So this brings us to a really important part of Pennsylvania property law, the Act of 1812.
Yeah.
Now, for all you law students out there just starting your studies, this act basically assumes that when two or more people own property together, they own it as tenants in common.
Okay, I remember that.
So tenancy in common means there's no automatic survivorship.
Right.
Each owner can leave their share to their heirs in their will.
Mm-hmm.
So how did the court make this default rule work with their decision in Regal?
Yeah, that's a great question. This is a super important part of the court's reasoning. They made it clear that the Act of 1812's presumption only applies if the deed doesn't say anything about survivorship.
Okay.
So, like, if the deed is totally silent on how the property should be split up or transferred when an owner dies, then you default to tenancy in common.
But in the Regal case, the deed wasn't silent, right?
Exactly. It specifically used the words tenants by the entireties.
Right. And even though that doesn't technically apply to unmarried people, it does strongly suggest they wanted survivorship.
Exactly.
So the court said that this very clear, even though legally wrong language, showing they wanted survivorship, was stronger than the general rule in the Act of 1812.
Right.
Basically, the deed made its intentions known in its own way about what should happen when one of the owners died.
Yeah, I like how you put that. It's a key point to remember. The statutory presumption is like a backup plan.
Okay.
But if the deed clearly shows a different intention, particularly about survivorship, that can overrule the default.
Gotcha.
And Regal is a perfect example of this principle in action.
So now Gertrude's other children, they tried to back up their argument by bringing in some outside evidence.
Okay.
Legally speaking, it's called parole evidence.
Right.
And they tried to use it to say that Gertrude never actually wanted Raymond to inherit the entire property all at once.
Okay, interesting. So why didn't the court consider this additional information?
Well, the court said no to the parole evidence.
Okay.
Because according to legal rules, that kind of evidence is usually only allowed to clear up confusion in the contract itself. And remember, a deed is a type of contract. Or to show that the document was made because of fraud, a mistake, or an accident.
Gotcha.
And the court in this case felt that the deed's language, even with the incorrect tenants by the entirety's phrase, clearly showed that they wanted survivorship.
Okay.
There wasn't any confusion about that part, even though they used the wrong legal term for the situation.
Yeah, it was clear what they were going for.
Right. And the court emphasized this old legal saying that deeds speak for themselves.
Oh, yeah, I've heard that one.
So unless there's like a clear problem with the wording being unclear or there's evidence of fraud or a mistake right there in the document, you generally can't bring in outside statements or evidence to try and change or contradict what the written words in the deed clearly say.
Okay.
And in the Regal case, the intention for survivorship was pretty obvious just from what was written in the deed itself.
Right. It was all right there in the document.
So just to sum up the main factors that the court used in its decision.
Okay.
The essential elements of their test, so to speak.
Yeah, like a checklist.
What were the biggest things the Superior Court considered?
Okay. So first, they looked at how clear the deed's language was.
Okay.
That was the most important thing. Even though they used the wrong legal term, the phrase tenants by the entireties very clearly showed that they wanted the surviving grantee to become the sole owner.
Right.
Second, they considered the fact that it was legally impossible to create a tenancy by the entireties between a mother and son.
Right.
So the court had to figure out what legally valid form of ownership could be recognized instead.
Okay.
And lastly, they couldn't ignore the inherent survivorship intention that's so closely tied to the phrase tenants by the entireties.
Hmm.
And that played a big role in how they interpreted the deed.
And the court actually had some really insightful quotes in their decision that highlight these key principles.
They did. For instance, they very clearly stated, the intent of the grantees must be gleaned solely from the deed's language.
Okay.
Which really emphasizes that the written document itself is the primary source for understanding the party's intentions.
And what about their response to trying to introduce that outside evidence?
Oh, they were very firm on that point. They said, in the absence of fraud, accident, or mistake, parole evidence is inadmissible to vary or limit the scope of a deed's express covenants.
Okay.
Reinforcing that the deed stands on its own unless there's a specific legal reason to look beyond what's written.
And lastly, what about how they addressed Pennsylvania's Act of 1812?
Right. So they explained that the Act of 1812 would have required a tenancy in common if the deed were silent, but here the language was explicit.
Right.
So that clarifies why the general rule of the statute didn't apply in this specific case.
So for all you law students listening, what's the most important takeaway from the state of Regal?
The biggest lesson here is that you have to be super precise when you are drafting property deeds. Using clear and unambiguous language that accurately reflects the intended form of ownership, particularly when you're talking about survivorship, is absolutely crucial.
Yes.
Because if the drafting is ambiguous or you use the wrong legal terms, it can lead to expensive and time-consuming legal battles.
Right.
And it might even completely undermine what your clients were trying to accomplish.
Exactly. And the specific lesson from the Regal case is that in Pennsylvania, if you use the phrase tenants by the entireties for people who aren't married,
right,
even though it won't legally create that specific type of ownership, the Pennsylvania courts will probably interpret it as creating a joint tenancy with the right of survivorship.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And that's all because of that strong intention for survivorship that's built into that phrase.
Yeah, you just can't ignore that underlying intention.
Right. So while the court in Regal could ultimately come to a reasonable conclusion based on what they thought the parties intended, it's always best to use the right legal terms from the very beginning.
Oh, absolutely. That's the safest way to go.
And for unmarried couples who want to own property with the right of survivorship, the correct legal term to use in the deed is joint tenants with the right of survivorship.
Mm-hmm.
Stated clearly and explicitly. No room for interpretation.
Exactly. Get it right the first time.
So as you're thinking about this case, think about the bigger implications here.
No.
How often do courts have to prioritize the intent behind legal language when the actual terms used aren't exactly accurate?
That's a good question.
And what does this tell us about both the power and the potential problems of the specific words we choose to use in legal documents?
It's a lot of responsibility.
It really makes you think about how seemingly small wording choices can have huge and lasting consequences for property ownership and estate planning.
Right. Every word matters.
What other areas of law might have similar issues where the intended meaning behind the words matters more than just their strict legal definition?
Yeah, that's something to really ponder.
That's something to keep in mind as you continue your legal studies. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into Estate of Regal.
My pleasure. Always happy to talk property law.
Until next time, keep those legal minds sharp. And remember, every word counts.
Absolutely.
See you next time.